Hello and welcome to a very special GTM podcast. I'm Alex. You can find me on Twitter and all sorts of things at Alex Does Cars. You can find Grand Tour Nation at Grand Tour Nation. I know, original. All over the place on the internet, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, blah, 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 blah. It's great. Right, it's very special because this is the official GTN Geneva Motor Show Roundup. Yep. Although this year's been a bit weird, hasn't it? Because of the coronavirus. Yep, that thing that everyone's talking about, the virus. It's been blown out of proportion a little bit by the media. It is the latest media sensation. So obviously the Geneva Motor Show has been cancelled because Switzerland thought it was a good idea to cancel everything that involved more than 1,000 people. And I agree, it is a good idea. Anything that saves someone's life is good. So what that's meant is while we didn't travel to the beautiful Geneva to see the latest beautiful cars, we just got press releases sent to our emails, which, you know, wasn't as exciting, but it beats getting the coronavirus. So let's begin. We'll start with the Zinger 21C. That's Zinger spelt with a C, silent C. Yeah, that got me for a long time. For a long time, I was calling it Zinger. By the way, just a quick note. If I do keep hesitating, it's because I am reading this from my notes. It is a long show. So let's talk about the Zinger. It is a hybrid. It's got a 2.88 litre V8. Yeah, only a 2.88 litre. That's very small. But what it's also got is a pair of turbochargers. The engine revs to 11,000 RPM. And this goes through a 7-speed sequential gearbox. But that's not the full story. There's also an electric motor at each front wheel. It's all-wheel drive with a total output of 1,233 horsepower. And I'm pretty sure it's built in California. But the thing that really, really separates this car from everything else is that it's the first car that's been fully 3D, well, almost fully 3D printed. And that makes it less of a car and more of a technology, a technological show-off, really, because what they've done is they've said, yes, we've got this really cool, fast car, but actually they've completely innovated the way cars are made, and by using 3D printing, you can dramatically reduce the cost of producing cars. So while the car is just incredibly potent, 0 to 62, 1.9 seconds, it weighs something like 1,250 kilograms, a 1-to-1 power-to-weight ratio. Quarter mile comes in 8.9 seconds, and you get 186 miles per hour in just 15 seconds. 15 seconds for 186 miles an hour? Woo, that's good. I want one. But what they've really done is they've said, yes, you know, we're badass. We can create a really fast car. But they've actually just come and innovated the whole process. So thank you for doing that, Zinger. I wouldn't be surprised if they produce less cars and kind of do like a bit of a Rimac and say, you know, we're professional, we're specialists in this this part of the industry. And I think I wouldn't be surprised if they make more money out of doing the 3D printed stuff than they do actually selling the cars. Although, you know, they are building 80 at $1.7 million a pop. Wow. Okay. They've also produced a racing version, and really the only difference between this and the standard, I say, with inverted commas, while also whacking myself in the face at the microphone, sorry if you heard that. So the standard version does 216 mile an hour. Okay, pretty fast. The real only difference with the racy version is it's got a lot more aerodynamics, so it's got 250 kilograms. That's the road version. The road version produces 250 kilograms of downforce at 155 mile an hour. The racing version produces 790. And obviously that produces more drag. So top speed has been reduced to 236 mile an hour. Thank you, Zinger, for showing us what we've been missing out on. And something else we've been missing out on. Toyota was going to show us a new small crossover based on the Yaris. Unfortunately, they haven't done anything about that. They're not going to reveal it. They're going to reveal it a little, you know, a few weeks down the line, because, you know, the Geneva show, everything went haywire. I think what companies are trying to do is get the best out of a bad situation. And if that means waiting till a lot of the news has died down. So, you know, you're not fighting for space in a on a website. I think Toyota's going to push it back a few weeks, possibly a month, maybe even a bit more. But they call it, what do they call it? They call it a, well, okay, fine. They call it a small SUV. It's going to be a hybrid front wheel drive. It's, okay. Yeah, thanks Toyota. Great. Can we have an MR2 now? Thanks. So, next one. The Rimac. Rimac. We haven't heard a lot from Rimac since Richard Hammond crashed one. But they say the C2 is going to be completely different from what we saw from their concept version, which was released, what, maybe a year ago? I can't remember now. The new Rimac was said to be coming during the Geneva show. We've heard little about it since then. But Mate Rimac, CEO of Rimac, has said that the concept we saw of the C2 was completely... it's completely different now. Everything has been changed. Literally everything has been changed since we saw that. He admitted that it took about 6 months to build the concept. And by that point, the concept was out of date. It was 6 months behind development. So what are the differences? Well, a lot of aesthetic differences. Obviously, it was a concept. So things like the headlights, which are all going to be 3D printed, all of that is going to be different. A lot of the aero, the channeling of the air, the spoilers, wings, the sharp bits, they're all going to be changed too. Apparently, there's no body panel that has been left unchanged. So it's literally new from the ground up. I think the most changes will happen inside. Obviously, it's a concept car. You know, you've got stick-on emergency buttons and stuff like that. It's all going to be overhauled. There's going to be machined aluminium switches and buttons and a whole new steering wheel. And the most innovative part of this, I say innovative, it might, you know, it's kind of been done before, but he says there will be a group of cameras integrated into the cockpit, not only to look out the front and the back to be used for autonomous driving, but also to watch the driver and make sure that the driver's body language at least looks like they're trying to pay attention to the road. Yes, it's been done before. But this is Rimac, they're going to do it better, aren't they? Now, onto something a bit more interesting. Well, not interesting, but a little bit more real. The BMW... the BMW i4 concept. So they properly revealed this. And if you haven't seen it, think a normal BMW. It almost looks 7 Series in shape. And then just add on a whacking great nostril. And then another... whacking great nostril. It's an electric car, and it's got vents or a grille even larger than all the cars I've ever driven put together. It's huge, but bar that, the rest of the car looks pretty good. Let me talk you through this. So this is, like I said, a concept. The actual car will be officially released next year, but BMW say this is very, very close to the real deal. So the grille at the front, obviously it's blocked off. It's electric. There's no need for that much cooling. There's no need for an air intake. They're calling it an intelligence panel, and that's because it houses a number of sensors that we suspect will have, you know, some input to autonomous driving. But can you imagine how much it's going to be if someone hits you? If you hit something in a car park, damn, that's one hell of an expensive grille. Power. We all want to know about power, don't we? What's the power? 530 brake horsepower. It's a single motor producing 530. That's pretty good. 62 mile an hour in just 4 seconds. It's pretty heavy. 4 seconds is fine. 4 seconds is fine. 80 kilowatt battery. That allows for an EPA estimated range of 270 miles. It's not quite up there with Tesla. Tesla's still owning the competition when it comes to range. But we'll see this next year. I don't really know if I want to see it. It's a very ugly car. But it's going to sell in droves, isn't it? It's going to sell in droves, especially in the Chinese market, because that's why they've got the grill. That's why they've got the grill. The Chinese market love. They love the grill. Let's move on before I start embarrassing myself even further. Let's move on to well, something a bit tasty. And why can't I find the articles? The articles are not here. I'm going to have to quickly find them. Give me one moment. Talk amongst yourselves. Da, 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 da. It's a little bit of lift music for you. Da, 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 How did everyone enjoy Top Gear? It was good, wasn't it? In the last episode, the ode to Colin McRae. I enjoyed that very much. Right, here we go. I found it. Koenigsegg. Boy, are they doing things. Are they doing things. They have produced a car called... Well, we've all heard of the Jesko, haven't we? The car named after his father... but this is called the Jesko Absolute. The Absolute. It sounds very Russian. And it's the fastest car Koenigsegg is ever going to make. And they've confirmed that. It's the fastest car they're ever going to make. And they've also confirmed that it is going to be powerful enough and slippery enough in the air to reach over 330 mile an hour. They've also confirmed that they'll be testing this in reality within the next year. Obviously, this is all from simulations, but this is Koenigsegg. Of course they're gonna do it. They're brilliant. 5 liter V8 in this car, mid-engined. Obviously, 1,280 brake horsepower, 738 pound-foot of torque. Yeah, that doesn't sound like a lot, does it? In this day and age, when you get an electric car with 1,600 horsepower, 1,280 horsepower isn't a lot, but that's a normal fuel. Yep. E85 is what produces the 1,600 horsepower and 1,106 pound-foot of torque. This power is fed through a 9-speed automatic transmission. That is simply remarkable. It is said to change gears, and I quote here, in virtually zero time from any gear to any other gear, regardless of how many gears are skipped. That is a direct quote from the company. I am so excited to... more than likely never see one in person, let alone drive it. But it's exciting. What do you all think of the high speed race? It's great. It's also completely pointless. But it's completely pointless from our point of view. But the industry is looking at this going, okay, so if this happens at 330 mile an hour, how can we make cars more slippery, more aerodynamic at 70 mile an hour? It's like the whole going to the moon, isn't it? The actual going to the moon bit was stupid, but the technology we got from going to the moon changed the world, or our world anyway, our little tiny world. Anyway, let's talk about the Jesko Absolute a little bit more. 8,000 man hours in total has gone into lowering its drag coefficient to just 0.278, and that's pretty good. And that's on top of the work they did for the original Jesko, which is a separate car. It took me a long time to realise that it's a separate car. Maybe because I'm an idiot. It weighs only 1,300 kilograms. And thanks to the carbon fibre monocoque, which runs through the whole Koenigsegg line now, it's incredibly rigid, even when you take off the removable roof that can be stored in the front. On top of this... despite the mind-blowing performance, Koenigsegg promises that it can be daily driven, thanks to a forgiving suspension setup. Okay. Yeah. You know what? I will test that for them. I will sacrifice my time to test the fastest car in the world. That's perfectly all right with me. But Koenigsegg weren't finished there. No, no, no. They wanted to wow the world a second time. I say they. It's not a plural. The company, it, wanted to wow the world a second time. So they released something called the Gemera, or Gemera. I think probably Gemera. Let's call it Gemera. The Gemera Mega GT. It is a four-seater. It produces 1,700 hybrid horsepower. It's got a three-cylinder engine. But thanks to an additional three electric motors, it still produces 1,700 horsepower. And it's got all the space you can need for luggage. It's got more cup holders than probably, I don't know, Toyota Prius. It's got loads and loads of cup holders. Seriously, people, it's got loads of cup holders. You will never run out of coffee. So the three-cylinder, let's talk about that. It's a 2-litre. It's dry sump, but it's got two turbochargers. And Koenigsegg calls it the tiny friendly giant. Obviously, it's a pretty potent little thing. Torque, by the way, comes in. I didn't mention torque. Torque comes in at £2,581. Sorry, I'm laughing. £2,581 of torque. That is ridiculous. So, what does that mean when it comes to performance? 0 to 62 miles per hour in just 1.9 seconds. And a top speed of 249 mile an hour. 249 mile an hour. That makes it the fastest 4-seater in history. That's pretty exciting. It also looks bloody brilliant. So, what keeps it on the road? What keeps a normal driver from binning it? Four-wheel steering, all-wheel torque vectoring, an all-wheel drive system, and the rigidity of, yet again, the carbon fibre monocoque. Let me give you a few quotes from Christian von Koenigsegg, the founder and CEO of Koenigsegg himself. He says, "Ultimate performance has belonged to the world of two-seaters with very limited luggage space. Until now. The Gamera is a completely new category of car where extreme megacar meets spacious interior and ultimate environmental consciousness. We call it a Mega GT." And yeah, I agree. It looks mega. It is a seriously good-looking car. It is one of the most, it was one of the most popular articles, popular images we've ever posted. It is seriously hot, and it's still got the really cool curved windscreen that you find in most other, or actually all other Koenigseggs. It's really, really cool. I should probably add, it's got all the technology you want as well. It's got wireless phone charging, it's got infotainment screens front and back for the passengers. It's got Apple CarPlay, a Wi-Fi connection, 3-zone climate control, electric seats, premium audio system with 11 speakers. Oh, it is cool. I think that's a car that you could possibly get past your wife. Although only 300 examples will be built, and no idea how much it's going to cost. I think quite a few bob. Let's switch now to Italy. In particular, Alfa Romeo. They've been teasing a high-performance car for quite a while now. Although, actually, this comes after them telling us that, no, they're not going to make a high-performance car. Instead, they're going to strip everything back and focus on SUVs, which, yes, is a fine business move because they sell like hotcakes. But so utterly boring. Apparently, they were lying. The cheeky buggers. They were lying to us. They've taken the Alfa Romeo Giulia and added a GTA badge, and actually a separate model. I think I just hit puberty. The GTA, and they've added a GTA M as well. So, let's talk you through the standard GTA first of all. Like I said, it's based on the Giulia. It's still a saloon. But what about a 0 to 60 mile an hour time of 3.6 seconds? Yeah, so they trimmed off 100 kilograms worth of fat to just make it faster, lighter car. It's going to handle better, it's going to be faster, it's going to brake faster. But the GTA M takes that a step further. Actually, it might take it 2 or 3 steps further. They've ripped out the rear seats, much like the Jaguar Project 8. This is still a saloon, but they've ripped out the rear seats. They've given you a 6-point harness, a roll bar. They've used Lexan windows on the side and rear while keeping it completely road legal. The 2.9-litre twin-turbo V6 from, apparently, not a Ferrari, has been given a once-over, and it now produces 533 brake horsepower. Wow. Yeah. And you can hear that goodness from the Akrapovic. I've never actually had to say that word. I've only ever typed it. Akrapovic titanium exhaust system. It's slightly wider up the front. It's got better suspension, upgraded springs, shocks, bushings. It's got a front splitter. It's got carbon fibre parts all over it. It's an ASBO on wheels. It really is. Oh, it's got some nice meaty 20-inch wheels for that ouch, I just broke my back feel on the road. Oh yeah, beautiful, beautiful. Now, let's talk about, I mean, first of all, let's talk about the images that came out. If you haven't seen the images, take a look, but don't take it as gospel, because they're obvious photoshops. If you actually reverse search the image, you'll find that they've just photoshopped it on old press releases of the Alfa Romeo Giulia. So, you know, take it with a pinch of salt. It's going to look good. But what do we think about really fast, stripped-out saloons? Much like the Project 8, why don't you just get a sports car? Yeah? No? If you ripped out the rear seats, then what's the point in having the larger car? Heavier car as well. Probably, you know, a little more movement in the body because it's a longer wheelbase. Why don't you just get a sports car that's probably going to be cheaper as well? I don't know. I'm happy it's been made, but would I buy one if I had all the money in the world? No, not really. I'd just go for the standard Giulia or the Giulia GTA. I don't know. The Giulia was perfectly fast enough. Yes, it didn't sell overly well, but unfortunately. But I don't quite get the point in having an even more track-focused saloon car, especially when you start ripping out the rear seats. That just seems completely alien to me. I don't understand, but I still love it because it's Alfa Romeo. Of course, you've got to love Alfa Romeo. Let's move on to a bit of British love. A bit of British love. I say British love, I don't love it. the Bentley Mulliner Bacalar. It's a 200 mile per hour luxury GT with 600 horsepower, but no roof, and it costs £1.5 million. It hasn't got a roof. It's completely roofless. It's not a convertible. There is just no roof included. Do you think that's an option? You might have to, I don't know, another 10 grand for that, if you fancy it. I don't know. It's got a bi-turbo W12 engine, and I'm trying to sound enthusiastic about this. So, let me just get through the figures. Bi-turbo W12 engine. It produces 650 horsepower, 667 pound-foot. Yeah, sorry, I said 600 before. It's 650. 667 pound-foot of torque and a top speed of over 200 mile an hour. 12 cars are planned for production. They've all been sold, by the way, obviously. 62 miles per hour comes in just 3.5 seconds. And the gearbox is a dual-clutch unit. Okay, let's talk about why Bentley have actually done this. Because there are people with lots and lots of money out there. And that's the only reason. It's not even, I wouldn't call it a good-looking car, especially from the front. The rear is more my style. Looks kind of, almost slightly Porsche-y at the rear. But I just don't get it. They say, Bentley's said that the Bacalar is a launching pad for the company to reach further into the market of rare and unique cars with Mulliner, the designers alongside them, and that's going to allow them to basically produce anything a customer wants, whether they want a certain colour of leather in the interior or moon dust in their paint. But I wish companies, okay, maybe this shouldn't come from Bentley because Bentley's a premium company, of course, but I wish companies would stop focusing on these really expensive, I mean stupidly expensive cars that are out of reach, and fill these shows like the Geneva show with something we actually might manage to afford one day. Anyway, a little bit annoying. You know, I'll add to this argument a bit later down the line, but yeah, I don't know. I'm not such a fan. They're going to sell. Of course they are, because, you know, there's oil money out there. But what's the point? What is the point? Just buy a, I don't know, Continental, for God's sake. Anyway, back on, from something not so realistic to a McLaren that 99% of us will never be able to afford. The 720S was always considered to be one of the greatest supercars of the modern era. It really is a brilliant car. It's fast, it handles like a bitch on heat, and it's at the same time incredibly usable. It is the perfect mix of everything. So McLaren have made it even more batshit crazy. They've called it the 765LT. LT obviously standing for long tail. It's based on the 720. The 720, yes. It's got lower weight. It's got a longer tail, obviously, and a few more sporty bits. The 4-litre twin-turbo V8 produces now 755 horsepower and 590 pound-foot of torque. That's pushed through a 7-speed dual-clutch gearbox, which shifts 15% faster than the 720S, if that's something you really want to go down to the pub and boast about. Whether you're actually going to feel that increase in shift time, or sorry, decrease in shift time, I don't know. But 0 to 62 does come in at 2.8 seconds, and it'll hit 124 mile an hour in 7.2 seconds. Sorry, I'm actually struggling from a cough. I've been really ill the last few days, and I do not feel good. Okay, carrying on. It weighs just 1,229 kilograms. That's 80 kilograms less than the 720. And that's, of course, thanks to a host of carbon fiber parts, a titanium exhaust system that exits out the rear, just under the rear wing, which is very nice, thinner glass, and lightweight 10-spoke wheels, which are, incidentally, wrapped in Pirelli P0 Trofeo R tyres. And those tyres are great. This car is great. I want it so bad. I really want it. BOTB. Anyone ever want a car in there? Because I want to try. I want to try. The track's also 0.24 inches wide at the front. And the whole car is hunkered down by 5 millimetres. Not a lot to look at, but it'll surely make a bit of a difference on track. However, how many of these cars are actually going to be driven on the track? Probably not a lot, but give me one and I'll give it a go. The springs have also been updated, and changes to the proactive chassis control 2 suspension control system sees the car even more agile than the original 720. Yeah, it's a little bit of a beast. Carbon ceramic rotors. You can get a load of center parts moved over if you want to, and oh god, it just looks so good. And if the 720S is anything to go off, this car is going to be possibly one of the best cars ever. It is going to be the bar, and everyone else, Ferrari, Lamborghini, Koenigsegg, even, you know, it's not all about speed, but that car's perfectly fast enough, and it's going to be a real bit of competition on the road. So where do we end this podcast? Where do we end it? How? What do we look to? Do we look to, I don't know, Ferrari, Pininfarina? No. We're going to look at the car that stole the show, and it's called the Hyundai Prophecy concept. Yeah, it's a Hyundai, but oh my god, is it good looking. It's obviously taken a few design cues from the Tesla Model 3, especially from the front. My god, look at the resemblance. It's seriously close. But Hyundai has released this to show us where Hyundai's design philosophy is going to take them in the future. They call it... Okay, this is going to get really sexy, just for a moment. I'm just going to get a little closer to the mic. I'm just going to lower my voice a little bit. They've called it sensuous sportiness. Damn. Okay. They call it the ultimate form of a motor car. And it's curvaceous. It's teardroppy. It's minimal. It is... Oh, I really understand why Hyundai is getting so turned on about this. Because it really is good looking. I quote, pristine surfaces and pure volume in combination with aesthetic harmony and functionality. Oh, Hyundai has been reading a thesaurus. I like it. Okay, another quote. We have brought to life yet another icon that establishes a new standard for the EV segment. Oh yeah, it's an EV, by the way. As well as pushing Hyundai's design vision to even broader horizons. Anyone else getting a bit hot? Nope, just me? Okay. Hyundai's design center, Sang-Yup Lee, says, a part of that expansion is what we call optimistic futurism. Now that is two words that just sound so good together. A design concept embodied by prophecy. With optimistic futurism, our aim is to forge an emotional connection between humans and automobiles. And if I'm not mistaken, there's already a bit of a connection, right? Isn't there? I'm pretty sure I love my car. In the same way my partner loves hers. Because it, you know, gets her to work, I suppose. Yeah, I mean, that's a bit silly. They are kind of pushing out all the fancy words. And it doesn't need it. They could have just released the images and said, look, we've got a new concept. Look how good that looks. And we would have still loved it. We still would have thought it stole the show. Stop it with a weird marketing talk, please, Hyundai. But let's just talk about what it brings to the competition, what it brings to the industry. Okay. So Hyundai has been thinking this way for quite a while, because this concept embraces hints like the pixel lamps from the previous concept, the 45 in this case. They've been implemented across the car in headlights, the rear lights and spoiler. And because of that, it really makes the Hyundai look like it's 10 years ahead. But the thing is, this concept doesn't, well, until you get to the interior, the concept doesn't look so undoable. It's, you know, it's possible because we've got things like the Tesla Model 3. You know, the realism is definitely here until you get to the interior, like I said. Hyundai's also said that the lights, these pixel lights, will be coming to their production cars soon as well. Looking inside, there's no steering wheel. Obviously, they've kind of, they're on the autonomous train, aren't they? They think everything's going to be autonomous. I rather doubt that. Oh, that's a tricky thing to say. Things will become autonomous, but not yet. And I don't see why all these concepts are coming out with no steering wheel. Because I want to drive it. So instead of the wheel, it's got a pair of joysticks on the driver's seat. What do they say? They've got a quote about this. Let me find it. They say, a completely new yet reassuringly familiar and intuitive driving experience. Reassuringly familiar? When has my granddad ever used a joystick to drive a car? Actually, when has my granddad ever used a joystick? Yeah, I don't know. I suppose my granddad's not going to be buying this. But I don't know. It looks like it's something from Star Trek, and it kind of looks cool, but I don't want to drive a car with a joystick. Just give me, please, three pedals, or, well, it's an EV, two pedals, and a steering wheel. That's all I ask, kind of. But apart from that, it is a really, really gorgeous car, and I'm very excited to see where Hyundai is going to go with this design language. The i20N is already kind of being teased. It's such an exciting time for the industry. It's such a scary time at the same time, though, because you've got all this autonomous stuff. And obviously, the Geneva show this year, or what there is of the Geneva show this year, it's really pushed the fact that we're getting seriously fast, and cars are getting seriously fast. And I like that. But like I said, I wish there were more cars aimed less to show off what a company could do in terms of technology and performance, and show off what a company could make for the right market. Because we're all here, you know, I don't want to spend 1.5 million on a car. That's ridiculous. I mean, if I had the money, I might do. But I haven't got the money. And I don't think anyone listening to this podcast is going to be able to put £1.5 million or dollars or whatever on a car and not feel slightly guilty about it. You know, that's ridiculous. But what they've also tried to do is push autonomy. And there are a lot of cars that I haven't talked about from the Geneva show. A lot of cars that just aren't that interesting. Or they just push autonomy. And I don't think, you know, it's cool, it's exciting. Yes, I think autonomy or autonomous driving will improve the roads. I think it'll improve the way people can get around. But do we need it in the Geneva Motor Show? I suppose we do. Can you tell I'm a bit tired and a bit under the weather? Okay, so main things to take away. Koenigsegg is back. They are just at the top of their game. McLaren, they're still churning out cars on the same chassis, aren't they? It's going to be incredible, but can they just calm down? Like, they know what they're doing. But Oh, that's my phone. But, you know, depreciation is a thing, people. BMW. Chinese market. Brilliant. Okay. Massive nostrils. Bentley. Boring. Boring unless you've got millions and millions of dollars to stick on a car that has no roof. Alfa Romeo. Oh, thank you, Alfa, for doing something and not just producing SUVs. That's great. Okay. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just search for Grand Tour Nation. Make sure you find us at grandtournation.com on the interwebs. And follow me, because when I haven't got a cold, I'm hopefully quite interesting. Alex Does Cars. That's Twitter and Instagram. Thank you so much for listening. This podcast is brought to you by quite a few people. Apple Podcasts. Shit. What are they? It's Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, and a whole host of other really unknown podcast suppliers. But you can find us all over the place. We're here to help. Catch us next time when we try to talk about cars again without so many hesitations. See you then, folks.